everybody, and welcome to Season 2, Episode 30 of the Hard Truth Inside the Football Industry Podcast. With me, long-suffering Bradford City supporter, Philip Eidson, and Aaron McCampney.
We're back!
So it's been a little while. Everyone, I think, is trying to say that the pod's not coming back or that we've disappeared.
No. But listen, they have to understand that you, my friend, are becoming very successful in business, which means you're a lot less attainable and available. So they have to understand you're running an empire you're building, Phil. And that's a compliment to you.
Thank you.
Obviously, I've got a lot of shit going on as well. You know, I said that in a tweet the other day that, you know, this year, people are like, oh, you're not on Twitter and whatever else. No, timing's everything. And in May, you know, after the relegation, it wasn't about hiding off Twitter. I had like two kids who are 16 and 15. You know, you got last 2 years of school in America, as you know, it's full on college stuff. You got to do tours, you got prep, you got college tutoring, a lot of stuff going on at home. And then our two businesses I've launched this last 3-4 months. And again, I said this recently, I'm trying to divide time whilst at the same time running a football club top to bottom is really, really difficult. And then obviously then the pod, and no, we're not stopping the pod. Season 3 will be back. Do you know what I mean? Next year, guys. So again, you know, and we don't want to be that podcast that only shows up every few weeks. We still eked out 30 episodes this season, which is pretty good going, you know, for a podcast. And I would say next year we'd do 35 plus. So that's the plan.
It's really a lot of my fault on the travel. But it's interesting, you know, we talked season one a lot about the business podcast and community that we put together. And really the foundations of the growth that I'm having in my business stem from some of the things that we did in that business community. So
good for you.
You always got to look over your shoulder because I can, you know, I guess that's what, you know, when you're on the roller coaster, you never quite...
Don't get fat and happy.
Exactly.
Don't get fat and happy. What I always say to you, you know, like my dad used to say, you're never happy. I'll be like, the day I'm happy is the day I stop doing well.
Yeah.
You know, but there's always a mindset of there's always someone wants what you have. There's always somebody chasing, you know, you. There's always competition to beat. You know, you have to be relentless in the pursuit, you know, of being the best of what you do. So you're on an upward trajectory. Long may it continue. And, you know, that's brilliant for you and the missus. Do you know what I mean? So hopefully some good things for you over the next couple of years.
Well, you went to Vegas since the last time we talked.
Sin City.
Yeah. How was your Vegas trip?
Well, there was no gambling. There was no strippers. There was no, you know, fucking the usual bit of fun you'd have out in Vegas. It was just business. It was all business for 2.5 days in a suite in the Aria, which is a really, really nice hotel.
Mm-hmm.
We had the gaff out there. Club staff, we had my two partners, we had Baz, and it was basically 2.5 days. I'm a bit superstitious, and leading up to when COVID shut our season down, that led to a really good period of us winning and then winning promotion. We'd actually been in Vegas before that for our meeting, so I thought, fuck it, let's go back to Vegas. And it was really good. It was good to catch up with everyone. It's a chance for my partners, it's easier for them to fly there. For me, you know, it was a few hours. And, you know, what it was it gives Grant, I'd already spoke to Grant and sat down with him and Cliffy 3 weeks ago to go over the presentation, players, recruitment, what we were doing as a recruitment department. And then the idea being is it's a presentation then to everybody now that my two partners are in the room together. And we go through, what did we go through? Went through staff, went through last year, we went through, you know, sports science, physios, all the issues we had, you know, pick the bones of the relegation. You know, is it recruitment? Is it fitness? Is it, you know, lack of investment? What is it exactly? So you go through all of that. Then obviously the manager talks about his philosophy. And you ask the questions, right, great, what are we recruiting for? Are we recruiting for a 4-3-3? Are we recruiting for 3 at the back? Because that's really important, you know what I mean, at the end of the day. Because if you say 3 at the back, you might need 6 centre-halves. If you say you're going to play 4 at the back most of the season, well, you need 4 centre-halves for 2 spots. So all those things are really relevant. And, you know, Grant plays differently from Darren formation-wise, which is fine because he won League One title playing that way. So I've never got a problem when a manager has his own formation, philosophy. So we go through that. We're going through the under-23s. We're going through the academy. We're going through budgets, the horrific financial, you know, landscape you face with relegation and a 300 grand parachute payment, you know, when you go down, as opposed to the 160 million you get when you come down from the Premier League. So there's all of those things you have to do. You go through pre-season. You know, obviously then we present the list to my partners, because that's a united front, myself, Baz and Grant, of the players that we want to sign, the players that we want to move on, all those things. And it was really, really good. Grant's, look, you know, fair play to him. He's very professional. He's evolved and matured a lot since he left last time. He's picked up some really good habits. winning habits and trophy habits, you know, but also from a presentation point of view, you know, he knows what he wants. And look, of course he wants the world within reason, but that's like every good manager, you know, it's never enough. They always want more. So then you have the little, you put up footage of the players that we're looking at, you know, and we look at that. We look at the strengths, the weaknesses. And really, it's probably a combined 20 hours over 2 days, you know, not taking into account the dinners you go out for, you know, of basically dissecting before and, you know, preparing for the future and the targets, you know, for next year. And obviously, League One's very competitive. And our ambitious targets are always to win promotion, you know, and have success at that level. So, yeah, really, really good few days. And then everyone goes home. And then obviously, it's playoffs, it's Champions League. It's you know, I said to Baz today, Baz, you won't hear it from anyone for like 2.5 weeks. A lot of managers, then the end of May, just bang, they go on holiday. And I think our players come back on, is it the 22nd of June? But the good thing about the gaffer is like him and his staff, have the players got like a 6-week program where they get 3 weeks down and then they get 3 weeks to seriously prepare for coming back. So they're in a position on day one where they can nearly play a game.
Yeah, they're not spending the next 3 weeks conditioning themselves.
No, puking up and whatever else. Like, he wants them ultra fit. And that's music to my ears after the horrendous year we've just had, you know, where we've got found out big time on that front. And, you know, all the players know if they report back and they haven't followed the program, you know, that's a problem for them. So, and I think all the players, they've all bought into that. So yeah, I'm super excited to hopefully have, and I touch wood here, a season where we have a bit of stability on the fitness front, where you're not missing key players and keepers throughout the team. You know, so from that point of view, but all good. I think he's now in Dubai, the gaffer. And I go next week on holiday to Dubai with the family. So, yeah, but still working. So just putting in actually proposals on some players to clubs today. So just finishing that up before we came on live on the air.
I saw Baz hanging out and enjoying after the playoffs the other day.
I spoke to him this morning. I was on the way to the airport to get the kids and Natalie, and Baz rang me. I said, my goodness, every time I saw the trophy presented, I saw your face behind. I said, you're like a star on TV. People were asking me, but Barry lives for the playoffs. He lives for going to those games. Vegas, I'll tell you a story. He landed, I want to say, at 1:30 on a Saturday, and he got to the League One playoff final 2 minutes before kickoff from Heathrow.
Yeah.
I mean, straight off a fucking, if anyone ever wants to question that man's fitness, you know, nearly 80 years old, mm-hmm. He's straight off a Virgin flight, he's in a taxi, and he gets to Wembley. And he still managed to have his lunch before going out and watching the games. You know what I mean? So he's an absolute machine. So, but yeah, I think he's gutted because the owners, the EFL owners meeting that usually happens in Portugal, obviously the last 3 years have been in England. Mm-hmm. Again, this June it's in England, whereas really it should be, you know, abroad. And of course, he loves to lie by the pool, get his tan, talk to all the other owners, talk to directors, do a bit of business.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but I think it's going to be it could be a rainy UK that he's going to end up spending 2 days or whatever at this next meeting.
He's going to have to do it at the preseason tour instead.
Correct. And we all head to Portugal. Exactly right. So, yeah, look, you know, I'm over the disappointment of everything that went on before. That's my mindset. Now I have to train myself and get excited about what's in front of us.
Yeah.
And that's the only way you can be.
How do you mitigate the impact of relegation from a financial perspective?
Painfully. You look at the numbers and you go, you know, this is the problem when you get promoted. You're planning to be championship. And it's really difficult when people say, sign them. And this is the thing you always warn about, that if you do go down, you're faced with a lot less income. You're faced with bigger bills. You're mm-hmm. faced with being a bit fatter than normal. So, you know, you have to trim all of that. You have to do good business and you have to make sure that you still have a squad that's capable of going back up again. So that they're all the challenges, you know, that's on my list of things to do and work on. And that's what I'm good at. And I've always said this, you know what I mean? And whatever, regardless of what people want to talk about recruitment last year, that's my forte, is piecing it all together. And I'll work with Baz, and we'll the players that leave will be the right ones that leave, and then we'll bring in the right ones as well. And thankfully our shopping list isn't too big. We've a very, very good squad. And you know, we're adding 4 or 5 maximum, that's it. And we feel we'll be good to go with that. So, you know, and we've zoned in on the players we want to bring in. And we're close on a couple of them, to be fair. So, yeah.
You know, I've noticed over the last couple of days, you've been getting more active on Twitter and chatting with folks about, you know, what, you know, some of the things that people have been asking is around what are the positions that you're looking to fill out of those four or five. So who, like, what are the gaps, or where are the places where you're thinking to strengthen?
The manager wants two goalies to compete with each other. You know, so we've got to do that cleverly. You know, as a goalie, again, we've got a goalie. We're trying to move on a goalie. And on the 23 talent that we're going to get out on loan for the season, we think needs a season of playing. We're working on that. Wants a couple of central midfielders and then potentially an attacking player that can play across the three in a 4-3-3. So they're the slots. And, you know, people were saying about defenders, and then I was like, Jesus, are you joking me? If, you know, you look at the defenders we have, you know, say you play two centre-backs. You know, you got young Manny, who's going to be phenomenal this season. You got Ronnie, you got Frankie Kent, you got Josh Knight, you've got Nathan Thompson can play in there. Dan Butler can play left side of centre half if we ever go to a three, which he's shown in the past. I'm sure I've missed the defender. That's just central defenders, you know. I mean, they can play in those spots. You then got a wing back, you got Butler, and you've obviously got Joe Tomlinson, Harrison Burrows. I was looking yesterday, I was watching the Forest game, and it came up. The boy we had, Toffolo, that was from Norwich, that was playing for Huddersfield. And he was number two in assists in the championship with 8 assists. And I was thinking, Harrison Burrows had 7 assists at 20 years old and 3 goals playing at left wing back all season. And I think he's gone under the radar. And that's not me, fans, trying to sell H, by the way. That's me saying, don't sleep on him. Because what a performance from somebody who was 19 when the season started in a team that got relegated, to have 10 goals and assists between them at 20. So he's got to be like high up there. And people don't talk about him like he's a left back, left wing back. But, you know, you watch enough games, he's very, very good. And we know he's very good from some of the clubs that are that like him. So that's one side. On the other side, we've got Thompson, Joe Ward, and we've got obviously young Benji, you know, who's had a few hamstring issues and, you know, whatever else. And then we've got another youngster, the gaffer likes a lot from the U team, who's just got a pro contract, who thinks he's got a real chance. So, again, stacked over that side. And then people will say, well, Joe Ward and Harrison Burrows can't play left-back and right-back if you play at four. And I go, did you watch the last 4 or 5 championship games of the season? They played left-back and right-back. And by the way, that's the championship, and they did pretty well. And this is League One. You'd like to think they'd do even better if they didn't play there. And if the gaffer wants to play a really attacking team, isn't it best to have them there, a left and right-back? Basically, wing backs playing fullback that can score and make goals, you know. So, so really, that's why there's no defenders really on the list, because of the formations and whatever. We know what we need in central midfield. We've got our list, and then we know what we need to get out. So, some of them will be quick, and some of them might take a bit of time. Ideally, you'd like them all on the plane to Portugal. You know, will that happen? 90% will. Maybe one won't. So that will take time. And then obviously there'd be interest in our players. That's normal as well.
And I imagine that you would replace any, if there were any outgoings, you would look to replace those outgoings.
Well, yeah, we're doing a little bit of that ahead of time as well. Do you know what I mean? That we expect if there's any big outgoings, do you know what I mean? Kind of thing. So yeah, absolutely. But we're very, like we said, like I said, and that's my laugh. That team, that youth, that pace, that technical ability, a year better, championship experience. If they play to the potential, it could be the greatest show on turf in the EFL. And that's putting a lot of pressure on them. But like I did before, you know, that's the expectation. That's what happens when you play for Posh in League One. You know, we expect to compete. We expect to be up there. And we're up against some monstrously big clubs. But we always feel we have a chance at this level. And hopefully these young players and experienced players can really step up. And if Jack Taylor... And listen, he ended up playing 36 games last year, so it wasn't as bad. If we can get 36 to 40 games out of Jack and get him in the best condition of his life, he's the best central midfielder in League One by a mile. I haven't even mentioned Yando Fuchs, what he could do at that level. Yeah. So yeah, and obviously a few of the fans are a bit upset with me over not signing Stephen Bender. So I did see that, you know, there was a lot of spend £1 million, you know, do this, sign Bender, goalkeeper, money, did it. We like Stephen. He did well for us, did well. You know, got injured a couple of times. He did well. You know, but he's Swansea's player and he's on the contract and he's on a substantial wage. And yes, they'd want, I don't know where £1 million came from. They'd want a fee. So that's not, we're not spending money in a transfer fee in the goalkeeper. And a lot of fans didn't like that. And I was like, okay, I'm gonna explain why. You know, last time we got promoted 18 months ago, 12 months ago, you know, Chrissy Pym was a free signing. He won the Golden Glove season one, season two. He did well, got injured the last eight games. We got a loan in. Bursic came in. You know, again, showing it can be done. And fans are ramming down my throat. We spent £1 million on Joel Randle. Da-da-da. Apples and oranges. You know, the comparisons are like... And I did a bit of research, but I knew in my mind I was right about this. I just want to run through for all the fans out there freaking out about me not signing Bender. In League One this season, Rotherham won the league title. They had two goalkeepers who played 20-odd games each. Johansson and, I believe, Vickers. Both were free signings as goalkeepers. Rotherham won the league. Wigan came runner-up. Ben Amos, free signing. Wigan goalkeeper. Sunderland won promotion through the playoffs. They had a youth team goalkeeper who came through their ranks in goal.
Mm-hmm.
So those three teams that went up from League One, how much was spent on transfer fees according to my statistics just now? Zero. Now let's go to League Two. Forest Green won the league. They had Luke McGee, one of our ex-players.
Yeah, he played that one for us as well, actually, last year.
Yeah, he basically was a free signing. They won the league. In second place, Exeter had a boy on loan from Sheffield Wednesday. Bristol Rovers, free transfer, goalkeeper. Port Vale, free transfer, goalkeeper. There's seven teams who were promoted, League One and League Two, who between the seven teams, total cost invested in goalkeeper, grand zero. Now, I'm not one to be trying to back up, you know, well, I am. I'm backing it up here and saying, I understand, but we're in League One. It's post-COVID. You've just been relegated. You know, we don't have money to spend on transfer fees and goalies. And clubs in League One and League Two don't generally do it. And generally, you don't get a lot of money for goalies unless you're the top tier of the championship. And that's where money is spent on goalies, correct?
Why? Why is that? Why do you pay or have to pay £500,000 for a National League striker and you can get a goalkeeper who's good enough to get you into the championship for free?
I don't know. I don't know is the answer, because there's a lot of them on loan. A lot of them are available. A lot of free transfers. A lot of whatever else. You've seen it. Even yesterday, Huddersfield, they had Nichols in goal from MK Dons. He couldn't get any MK Dons team 2 years ago. He was championship goalkeeper of the year. 18 clean sheets. He was free. So again, you know, I don't know the answer to it. All I know is that very little trade is done on goalies in the league, outside the Premier League. If you look at it, you know, and even the goalies, you think Sam Johnson, he never went for the big money. Mm-hmm. He's leaving West Brom. Isn't he on a free? Is it West Brom he's at this year? It was the other one. Butland for years was hanging around on the periphery. You thought he was going to go for big money from Stoke. He didn't in the end. He went to Crystal Palace. You know, it just doesn't seem to happen. I understand where our fans are coming from. And, you know, maybe next time I'd spend money in the champ to try and, you know, but I just think in League One and League Two, and I'm not trying to be smart. I just don't think it's the be all and end all. I think this, you know,
it's not where you'd put your money.
No, and I looked at Sunderland. I love their young goalkeeper. I mean, he's been out on loan, you know, and again, he's come in, he's dominant. He's played for them. He's one of their own, you know, and again, you know, and the other goal is his experience. So I get it. I get what fans are saying, but I'm trying to explain my side of things, that when fans are saying, oh, it's the be all and end all, I'm trying to say to them, based on the seven teams that were promoted this summer, it's not.
Yeah, there's not a huge difference between a good goalkeeper and a bad goalkeeper. It seems like it's a lot of it is dependent upon what's around them.
Correct.
You know, we had one, Johnny McLaughlin, who we didn't think was that good in League Two, and he ended up playing for Sunderland and going to Rangers and in the Scotland squad.
Yeah, doing well.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of them things. And fans can get on goalies really quickly, and then they become obsessed with goalies really quickly and cult-like. Yeah. And you're thinking, geez, you know, they must have had like 10 clean sheets and dead at them. Really? And it's just like, tranquilo. At the end of the day, we love Steve and he was great for us. But he's not affordable.
Now, is that another position where you'd look to the loan market for?
Yes.
Or would you want to bring somebody? So you'd go loan again if the right player came up?
Absolutely. Not a problem. Mm-hmm. And with one eye on, you know, maybe down the line, you can turn that loan into a deal.
Yeah.
So, you know, absolutely, definitely. I've got no problems about that. We've done it before. You know, we won promotion, but one coming in at the end of the season on loan. I think, you know, a loan player coming in as a goalie and they're playing a lot of games is never an issue with. It's the loan players who come in who don't play who get sullen and down and despondent and, you know, can maybe create issues in the camp. doesn't usually happen with goalies. So that hopefully addresses the goalkeeper situation.
Yeah, we had a lot of questions. We had one specifically from Dez around that.
Hopefully Dez has answered. I've given Dez the answer. You know?
Let's see. What else have we got? So the last pod that we did was around the bonds and the bond issuance. And it looks like it went really well. You got your $2.5 million capped.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
Really short period of time.
Absolutely brilliant. Went really, really well. It was 8 days, I want to say, and you know, don't quote me if I'm incorrect. And again, always have to be careful what I say. Capital at risk all the time you talk about the bonds.
We're bringing the disclaimer that I put at the beginning of the last show.
Exactly. But you know what? Phenomenal uptake. You know, really, really happy with that. Fair play. And, you know, from people all over the place. And that's great to see. So, yeah, really good. Went exactly to plan. The folks who were incredibly professional to deal with as well. And that's always good when you partner up with an organization that knows what they're doing. They're very good at it. And really happy with it.
And does that give you confidence as an owner that, you know, there's a community there behind, behind the direction that you're going in, like a vote of confidence almost.
Yeah.
But also that you're not kind of on your own here.
No, because people know as well that, you know, I think they've seen the record that I've had in the last 15 years in the transfer market and running the club really well. That's what I would expect people would go off as well, you know, and they would go, okay, yeah, you know, Peterborough United, whilst they might not be everyone's cup of tea, or I might not be everyone's cup of tea, they go, well, actually, they run a really well-run ship here. You know, they win promotions. Yes, they come down. They've sold some big players. They like to do things on the front foot and score goals. That's always been the mantra for the football club. So, yeah, I think, you know, it is a little bit like a vote of confidence when you see so many people doing the uptake in it.
So the rest of the summer then, so, you know, you talked about you're going away, but, you know, work obviously continues. Pre-season plans, have you got any friendlies in the books yet, or when should folks be expecting that those to be announced?
We're working on getting them all out this week. We go to Portugal, and I want to say the 2nd of July for like 6 days. We've got a couple of games out in Portugal. Those will be announced as well. Mm-hmm. And we're working on two home friendlies as well as a few away games. So, yeah, we're pretty much, we've got them all filled in. We're just waiting on a couple of yeses, and then obviously it'll be announced. So excited. You know, we launched a third kit yesterday. It was exciting, black and gold, like that. Hadn't seen it myself, so it was nice to see it. A friend of mine texted me, said, what's this 441 all about? And I was like, WTF was my text back.
Right.
But no idea what they're talking about. So then I was like, oh, look at the Posh account. I was like, oh. So I emailed Phil and said, hey, what are the commercial boys up to? You know. But again, you know, I trust our commercial staff. I trust the decisions that I made. We've got some incredibly good, creative, excellent people behind the scenes that we as owners give them autonomy sometimes, a power to make those decisions. You know, you don't need to micromanage every person that works at your football club. And we're very fortunate that we've got some brilliant people in various departments across the club. And they're doing a good job. So I know people wanted the pizza shirt, you know, a throwback. And you know, that's something that's been discussed. And it's not off the table for fans who've asked. But I like the black and gold. Listen, I love pink and black. But we haven't seen the home and away kit yet. But listen, let's see. It could be exciting in the next couple of weeks.
Have you seen the home and away kit yet?
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
All shall be revealed.
Yes. Excelente. Says El Presidente.
Yeah. we actually just announced a new deal. We in Bradford City with Macron. So we're moving from AVEC, who were distributed for Nike, I think. It's kind of started from Nike back in the day, to Macron. So we haven't announced the kits yet, but, you know, it's a really good deal for City. In terms of, you know, how much kit that you get for, because basically the way that these deals work is that the clubs give you the manufacturer gives you a certain amount of kit and everything that comes along with it, you know, to kit out your own team. And
because everyone thinks you get all that for free usually, but you're right, you get an amount you're allowed in freebies for your own kit, and then every time you go past that you have to buy it yourself. And then obviously you get it at cost price or whatever else. And then you obviously, some of these suppliers, these big, big companies, even when it comes to buying all the kit in, they won't give you great payment terms. Like, you'd be amazed when you're dealing with some of these companies and it's like, right, we need 200 grand's worth of kit to sell. It's like, yeah, we want half of that now and the rest of them, you know, whereas some of the newbies have come in and gone, well, we'll let you 3 months to pay. Because cash flow for every football club is really critical, I think, Keith. So talk to me about the Bradford. What else did you get? I mean, no surprise, you're a massive football club. I would imagine there was a queue lined up around the corner.
It was time to refresh. And I think when we went to market, you know, we were able to just do something a bit more interesting. And
no surprise.
I haven't seen the kits or anything yet, so we'll see what comes, but they're usually pretty well.
Who's your sponsor, by the way?
JCT 600. So JCT 600 is an automotive dealership, you know, around the north, based out of Bradford. The owner of it passed away a couple of years ago. I think it was in his 90s when he finally passed.
Yeah, it's a good image.
Todd off. He was like honorary life president and was involved as chairman, you know, back in the 80s. And so, you know, a long standing association with the club. And so they've been sponsors for years and years and years. I mean,
it's so important to have, sorry to stop you talking here, but it's so important to have good club partners, you know, like good sponsors. We, you know, like you, we've been really fortunate, you know, like really, really good. You know, obviously Mick George is the easy one, Weston Holmes, but there's a lot more than just them. We've had like five or six of the same ones now for years, true good and bad. And it's really a testament to how good they've been with us. That, you know, they stick with you, and it's not just the glory of, well, we're going to sponsor you because you're in the championship. Do you know what I mean? And I'd imagine Bradford, you know, because it's a family club, I would imagine there's a lot of local businesses that still put a lot of money in and sponsor, right?
Yeah, and you know, back in the Edin Rahic days when he was chairman and CEO, I mean, he damaged a lot of those relationships. And so it took a little bit of time to come back. But I think that's, to give Ryan credit, he's done a really good job of bringing all those companies back into the fold and making them feel like they're part of the football club again.
I keep saying it. You got a good CEO there, guys. Don't fucking hound him out of the place. Fucking give him a bit of breathing space. So you've obviously been speaking to Ryan. And obviously I dropped you I didn't want to be hassling Ryan, you know what I mean, the last couple of days. So I dropped you a couple of tips on a couple of potential gem deals for you this summer from us, but that's if Husey likes them or not. But I personally think the two I gave you should be in your 11 and would help you win promotion from League Two with a canter. How is the recruitment now? Because obviously Ryan's working with another new manager. It'll be a whole new process for the summer. How's he finding it?
Well, you know, they brought in a head of recruitment as well from Middlesbrough. And so that's something that we've wanted to do for a long time and then kind of got derailed with Derek Adams wanting to take control of everything. And, you know, we let Derek Adams do that and obviously didn't really go to plan. So, you know, I think we've been a little bit more forceful this time in this is the plan.
Try to explain to the fans, Phil, they never get this. Why do we have a recruitment committee at the club that basically is there to ensure against a manager doesn't get his own way and do his old thing and then leave 6 months later and leave you in the shit? And that's why fans get angry with our recruitment sometimes. And I say, I'm never going to change it because it protects our football club from exactly what you just explained, so that you don't have 20 new players arriving every summer and you're left with a load of duds from before.
Yeah, and they're all on 2-year contracts. And so there's nothing you can do to ship them out. So you got to pay them all off. Correct. To get rid of them the next time you want to bring in the next batch, and then your manager gets sacked 12 months later. And it's, I mean, that's basically been the cycle of the last 5 years for us.
So give me the juice. Who's the new recruitment guy signed? Who's he got? Who's he signed? Who's he got for yourself?
So the funny thing is, I've not really heard much about these players, which is interesting. So, I mean, I know of Jamie Walker, obviously he was on loan to us at the end of the season. Yeah. So he signed.
As long as he stays fit, it's a good signing.
Yeah. Goalkeeper is a lad called Harry Lewis, who came from Southampton.
Yeah.
We have a centre-half we signed from Barrow called Matty Platt.
Yep, solid.
Ryan East from Swindon, defensive centre midfielder, I think Elliot Watt kind of type of player.
Yep.
And then Jake Young from Forest Green up front. So all relatively young, you know, 22, 23, 24. All given 2-year contracts, maybe even 3, I think, with options.
None of those players would be expensive.
Right.
So they're calculated risks. So I'd imagine a lot of those players would be on probably grand and a half a week, if that. You know, a lot of them are so young, you know, that they come through academies, they'd be at clubs where they're on probably 800-900 grand a week. So, you know, the good news there for a club your size is if half of them were duds, it's not going to be a massive financial hit. Do you know what I mean? And then you look at plan B, can you get them back out if you need to on loan? Not sure, because a lot of them haven't played as much, but what else is on the menu? Is there more coming?
Yeah, I think that's just the start. I think that some of it's going to be dependent upon what happens with the out of contract players that we've made offers to, but that you know, some of them may move on. So like Paddy O'Connor, centre half, Charles Vernon, who's a winger, Elliot Watt, defensive centre mid.
I had his agent on last week, funny enough.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, messaging me. Actually, a lady agent messaged me last week. I shouldn't have said that probably, but no, don't worry. We're not in for him.
No, I mean, I know that he's been on the, you know, there's a lot of folks in Championship League One who've been taking a look at him.
2 years ago, hot to trot.
Yeah.
You know, I there'll definitely be clubs in for him because there's upside. You know what I mean? Probably not had the best year of his life, you know, statistically and numerically and with the team struggling, but there's definitely upside in there. Are Bradford trying to re-sign him?
Yeah, we're trying to re-sign all three of those.
Yeah, I would, if I were that kid, I would stay at Bradford.
Mm-hmm.
I would win a promotion with Bradford. And if I were the agent, I'd be like, well, if we're going to stay, I'd get a release clause in the contract. That's up to you if you do that or not. I'd obviously tell the agent to fuck off. But, you know, the reality is I'd be, club Bradford size, winning a promotion there. You know, there's a lot of upside to that, as opposed to maybe going to a struggling Championship side or maybe a, you know, mid-table League One side or whatever else. You know what I mean? So, you know, people forget how big Bradford is. So, you know, if I was Elliot Watt, I would definitely re-sign there.
Now, do you think Mark Hughes being the manager is a pull, or is it really just all about pound notes for...
I don't know about Sparky. You know, it's, you know, if you'd asked me 5 years ago or a few years, I'd say yes. You know, what I love what he's done is going to Bradford, he's obviously trying to address that. In other words, he's not a current hot-to-trot manager, but he wants to go and win a promotion and show people that he's not just a guy at Manchester City, you know, Southampton, the bigger clubs. And for that, you have to give him a lot of respect. So you're kind of rooting for him to do well. But I would imagine if he sits in a room with any player, the problem again is a lot of young players nowadays, they probably never, some of them would be like, well, I don't remember Mark Hughes.
The heck,
it's a generational thing. Yeah, it's the generational thing, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, it's, yeah, they sit in a room with Steven Gerrard, they're like, oh, Steven Gerrard, you know what I mean?
Get a bunch of, you know, 40-year-olds
videos. Yeah. In a room. Yeah. You talk volleys and football, and all I can think about is Mark Hughes, you know what I mean? So if I said that to a 19-year-old footballer, he'd be like, huh, what? Wouldn't know what that meant, you know what I mean? So, but I would imagine he's quite a good character to get in a room with the player to try and convince him to come. I mean, Christ almighty, I mean, he's a legend in the game, so it'll be interesting. You know, what do you think hasn't been signed so far that you desperately, desperately need?
What hasn't been signed? We need a strong midfield, you know, somebody who is going to go strong in the tackle, who is going to kind of boss midfield around a bit. We don't have anybody. And I feel like we've missed that for a couple of years because we've just been a little bit too weak in the middle. And then, you know, the obvious that every man and his dog wants is the goal scorer.
I offered you one. I'm telling you, 20 goals all day long from us.
We'll see what comes back.
I'll tell you right now.
The word's in.
It'd be going somewhere else in League Two, if not. And when he pulls up 20 goals, I'm going to pull up the message I sent you about him. You know what I mean? Like whatever else. And before fans get excited, you know, he's in our 23s. He's not on our first team. Do you know what I mean? But he's got pedigree, and he will score for fucking fun, in my opinion, in League Two. So, but as I said to you, I did throw that out there.
Yeah. So we'll see, but it looks like we're trying to get some things done early. Like you said, you know, you want them in the ground for the start of preseason training if you possibly can.
You do. You want to get going.
I imagine that some of those, some of the gaps will be filled by loan players from his contact book. You know, when those loan players start becoming available.
Makes sense.
And that's just a bit of a waiting game at the moment.
So optimism is across the Valley Parade again.
Well, it always is at this time of year. You know, we'll see if it survives the first few months of the season.
Well, now here we go. Like I said on Twitter, you know, Peterborough usually lose their first game of the season. Watch them come for me. And I put up like a gift, and I would all like locusts, you know, they'll be like coming. Here we go again.
it's usually the case for us as well. You know, we'll lose two. Yeah. And again, no disrespect for them. We'll lose to Sutton or something at home first day. And then it's like, okay, here we go again. But, it's been a long time since I can remember a resounding win on the first day of the season, probably in the 90s or something stupid.
Wrong. I think for the last like three seasons for us, I think we've lost three of the first four at the start of each season, even in the promotion one. And I remember everyone losing their shit, and I was just like, thank you.
One year we were Sven and Notts County's first game, which we lost 5-0. And that was a good old welcome to the season.
I guess the one thing Nottingham Forest have shown this year, don't get too excited, you know? Don't get too excited at the start of the season, right? You know, like, don't get too down. Don't get too excited. Boom.
And Mansfield, wow, too. I mean, I know they just couldn't quite make the final hurdle, but, I mean, they were really struggling in the beginning of the season.
I didn't put it on Twitter. I wanted to wait to the podcast. So massive congratulations to Rotherham, to Wigan, to Sunderland, you know, particularly the Sunderland fans. You know, they've had 4 or 5 years of purgatory in League One, so fair play. Massive congratulations to Forest Green, to Exeter, to Bristol Rovers for that miraculous, like,
what a last day of the season that
was. I messaged Waya, the owner, over the weekend about it, you know, and Exeter for being such a well-run football club. And a massive congratulations, obviously, to Port Vale. You know, everything their manager's gone through, I was kind of rooting for them to win, if I'm being honest. Good for the Radfords at Mansfield, but, you know, I was kind of happy for Daryl so and his family, because, you know, for that to happen, you just, like, you know, wow. And the owner of Port Vale's a nice, you know, really nice lady. They run a good shop there. And then obviously, you know, in the Championship, you know, crikey. I mean, yeah, the Forest story, you know, fair play to Steve Cooper. I mean, you know, 2 years in a row losing out in the playoffs and then to go do it. And you kind of looked at it and went, the way I judged the game was, I looked at both teams and thought, who out of these two teams will do better in the Premier League? And for me, it was going to be Forest. You know, based, I know Huddersfield are like hard graft, fight, you know, whatever. But just looking at the talent, I just thought Forest would do better in the Premier League. So I'm happy for them as well, because, you know, it's been so long since they got to the Premier League. And I've had my battles over the years with Forest, but very, very happy for them. They got a new owner. He's a colourful character. And, he's obviously speaking about they want to have a right go. And look, good manager, good team of players. You know, yeah, it was a good end of the season for all those teams that were promoted.
Do you think that Steve Cooper losing the last couple of years helped him this time around?
I think he overachieved at Swansea. Mm-hmm. I think he was at a club that was needed to sell players that didn't have the resources because of the relegations. They had the expectation, but not the resources. And I think him getting to the playoff semis, then the final last year, I think it showed what a good manager he was. And people spoke about style of football. And, you know, his style wasn't great. But that's based on Swansea have always had a certain style, so it didn't fit with Swansea. But he showed by going to Forest and doing what he's done at Forest. And the football's been decent at Forest. We played them and lost 1-0, and it was a very tight game. But they're a very good team. And he likes young players. And, you know, that's from his English under 17 heritage and background and whatever else. So, listen, fair play. You know, and he said it himself. He said in his post-match interview, it's life-changing for him and his family. And what he meant by that is, you know, the money, I would imagine, as well, for managing in the Premier League, his star is shining bright. And people forget about that sometimes, you know, like, football managers are normal people too.
It's not like a lot of them aren't Wayne Rooney with whatever Wayne Rooney's got in the bank.
No, exactly. That's what I mean. They're not on 100 grand a week. They're not.
Yeah.
You know, salary in, I go through the leagues, you know, League Two is probably for a football manager 120. Tops. League One is probably 150. You know, Championship, you know, bottom half of the champs 220, 240, and then up towards the top be like half mil to a mil, unless you're a Scott Parker or a Fulham manager where they're Premier League clubs and they're paying maybe more. So you know, it is life-changing. To go to the Premier League, I'd imagine he'd be on a couple of million a year. I imagine he probably got a million bonus if his agent was any good. So that's life-changing, and he deserved it. And I quite liked his interview, and I liked hearing his players talk about him. Because he always has that appearance of, he never came across as ultra charismatic. But when you hear him talk, you can understand what the players like him, you know, and the things he said, and they resonate with you. And I thought, yeah, he handled himself very well. So yeah, really, really good weekend of football, to be fair.
Yeah, and Huddersfield, I mean, I think that they overachieved in getting to the playoffs.
Massively overachieved. Their manager, you knew he was going to be good. He came from Leeds, took a year. You know, they did some good recruitment in the summer. You know, they banded together a lot of players, didn't spend much money. Lewis O'Brien is a Rolls Royce of a player there for them.
We had him for a year on loan a couple of years ago. And even in a relegation, it was the year we got relegated. Yeah. He was a 19-year-old kid who thought he was coming to sit on the bench. And he was, you know, played one game straight in the team. He played 40 games, I think it was. And he was head and shoulders above everybody else in that relegation.
Different mustard. He'll go for 15 million plus. So that will be the consolation for Huddersfield. They can rebuild. you know, and they obviously have aging strikers as well. So, but they've got a good manager, and he's obviously very, very tactically astute. Set pieces again, as I've always spoken about, you know, played a big part.
And with Dean Hoyle coming back in as well.
Yeah, you know. I was good for Dino because I do like Dino a lot. You know, we get on very well, regardless of our history and whatever. So, yeah, they're in good hands. They're fine. Huddersfield, they're like, listen, with Dean Hoyle there and the Hoyle family, absolutely in good hands.
Let's kind of go through the leagues. And I know we did League One a little bit. Sorry, we did the Championship a little bit there. So we had Man City, obviously, last day, pipping your Liverpool boys. And I'll tell you what, for 10 minutes there, it was looking like all you needed to do was get a goal.
I knew it. The problem with Man City, and I'm sitting there watching it, I said to my missus, these fuckers will score 3 goals. You know, I knew it because they're just relentless. You know, unbelievable. And it didn't help Liverpool weren't up.
Right.
If Liverpool had been hammering Wolves 3-0, like they should have been.
More pressure.
Yeah, I mean, I wish Wolves had put that much into it when they played City a few weeks before, you know. But, you know, it's the final day of the season. I just knew it. If Liverpool had been winning their game when City were 2-0 down, it might have been different. There might have been more panic and apprehension at the City ground. But fair play. They deserved it. Liverpool, you know, is what it is. You know what I mean? It's just, it was a season that was nearly just magnificent that's turned out to be excellent. And I know everyone's having a go and they're talking about, well, they didn't score in 3 cup finals. Yeah, you're right. But they still got 2 cups.
Mm-hmm.
And Jurgen's adding to the collection. He picked up 2 trophies he hadn't won. So now he can do the history tour and go back and start winning them all again. And if they recruit well in the summer, you know, I think they'll win the league next year. I do. Even though City have got Haaland, I think City will be all about the Champions League next year. Just Champions League. And I think if Liverpool go out and if they keep Salah, and okay, Mane might go, and they recruit someone in midfield because they do need a goal-scoring midfielder. And if they do those 2 key pieces, I think they'll be unstoppable next year. I think they'll win the league. Don't think they'll win anything else. I don't think they'll go far in the Champions League. I think they want to win another league title because it will be a great tragedy, this group of players. And now a lot of them are going into the 30s. If they end their career with only 1 league title.
Yeah.
And that would be because of the greatness of Manchester City.
And that no one was there to see it.
And no one was there to see it, which would be the biggest gutter. And obviously the Champions League, I watched the game, saw all the fraud and nonsense going on. You know, again, 24 shots, you know. But to be fair, yes, Courtois was man of the match, but you have to blame the strikers. They didn't take the chances. They didn't put them away. Salah's disappeared since January. You know, he's 3 goals in 20-odd games or whatever else. You know, his agent who likes to tweet and likes to take the piss and whatever else, I would say he's regretting not signing that whatever contract they offered him. Because if I were Liverpool, I'd be looking at that going, is this because he's going to the other side of 30? Is there, you know, I played a game. Looks like a decline here. So I'm going to give him 500 grand a week, you know, because that Mo Salah from January to the end of the season, I'm not sure he's getting 500 grand a week.
No, he's in the team because he's not Salah, because of his name and his
ability. Correct. And I got to be honest with you. I mean, the amount of times he kept losing the ball, you know, in that final, you know, and then you look at Madrid and Benzema just sticks to his foot. You know, so look, Klopp is Klopp. I do. I think Liverpool will win the title. I think they'll win it by 5 points next year. That's my tip.
Now, there's been some grumbling about Haaland. Oh, he's not really fit for the Premier League. He plays a different style than the Premier
Bollocks.
League. That
Bollocks.
That just teams that were jealous they didn't get him.
I feel like I put you in the Man City team and you'd score 10 goals. Do you know what I mean? If you played 50 times, you know, on that team, Haaland will score 30 goals. The only question mark over him is his injury record. So he is at times in and out. But when he's in, he scores. So he's like 1-1. He will score, I bet my, you know, one of my testies again, he will score 30 goals for fun next year. He will be prolific in the Premier League if he's fit. No doubt about it.
It's going to be interesting seeing him come, for sure.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Listen, the Premier League is going to be unbelievable next year. You got the fellow who's come into Man United. Arsenal will be a year older with some exciting young players. Tottenham now have got the bit between the teeth. Conte, that fucker who stopped Liverpool winning the title, they're going to be a force to be reckoned with because he's just that manager. But bear in mind, he's 2 years at max.
Yeah, you know, this is like second year, right?
If Spurs don't win anything, you know what happens with Conte. The players work for him for 2 years, and after 2 years, he moves on because it's that level of intensity. The players can't, they're just not into it on year 3. So that'll be interesting to see. But I think Spurs have a fantastic chance with Conte next year. They could be, for me, be the surprise package.
What do you make of Chelsea with the takeover? Like, are they a different animal now?
I think he'll be under pressure if they don't start well. I think because of the way the season ended and then losing the cup finals and then kind of their league form being a bit rocky, they've got a lot of work to do defensively. They're losing, obviously, Christensen, and they're losing, obviously, Rudier or whatever it's called to Madrid. Then they got the 37-year-old centre-half. I think, yeah, if they do good business, they're going to be there. But it's Chelsea. They're always there, thereabouts. And it'd be interesting to see now with a fund owning it or a hedge fund guy owning it, whatever, that, you know, in the past from Abramovich, if they got a bid of 70, 80 million for a player, be like, no way. It'll be really interesting to see how that club operates now under
it. And they want somebody who just writes a check.
Bang. Lukaku, yeah, no problem. There's 100 million. Get him on a plane for a medical. It's going to be really interesting to see how business takes shape. But it's Chelsea. They're a magnificent club. I would expect them to be at the party for a lot of trophies.
Mm-hmm. Now, on the other end, who really knew that Leeds would get so close to going down? I mean, we talked all season about the fact that we didn't think that it would go down to that. And at the end of the day, Burnley, and we talked early in the season after the takeover about the one thing Burnley don't want to do is get relegated.
Yeah, I mean, in defense of Leeds, I'll say this. When I said they finished comfortably top half, I didn't realise Bamford had missed most of the season.
Mm.
I didn't realise Calvin Phillips would be missing for half of the season. And then Luke Ayling had got, you know, when you look at the injuries, and as we know from Peterborough in the Championship, when you lose spine of your team or quality players, there's always going to be a problem. And there's that Bielsa intensity. And not having those signings come in to help, obviously they got away with it and they stayed up. I don't expect that mistake to happen again. I think Leeds are own very, very prudent guy. And I think he'll look at it and go, Bielsa was probably more difficult to buy players for, you know, very much, you know, well, I don't want him and I want, you know, and then you end up with no one. And then you end up in that situation where they got like a teenage striker, you know, coming in and they won't be like that again. I'm not sure about the American guy, but I know they'll recruit well this summer. And I'm not going to make my prediction top half because they got in the shit this time, but I hope they do well because I didn't want Leeds going down. Burnley, yeah, you're always worried about Burnley. I know the press are writing about it and obviously the guys there. Let's see what happens. Everyone's kind of betting on him going down again. That's probably too harsh. But obviously, years of not enough investment in the first team and signing too many older players, that would be my only criticism of Sean Dyche, is the amount of veterans he signed, which have now left them in a place where it's an old team. So, you know, there's going to be a lot of work needed in Burnley this summer. That's yeah.
If ever there's a team that needs to bounce back straight away, I'll be... you have some long-term problems, that's it.
Phil, Sheffield United have shown not so easy. Bournemouth, it took 2 years to bounce back. Fulham are the bounce-back kings, but everyone else takes 2 years. You know, again, they're in a league where it's going to be, you know, Norwich have come down, Watford have come down, you know, and they usually win and go back up. So, I don't know. You know, Burnley, it's going to be an interesting place the next couple of months. I guess they've got assets they can sell, some good assets, the goalie, the centre-half, the boy Cornet. So I guess if that guy wants to pay back the debt or if there's any issues with that, they will raise money. But it's how they recruit. So let's wait and see. But you would feel if Burnley don't get back in the next 2 years, it could be a decade before they got back to the Premier
League. It's like a slippery slope if they don't take advantage of that parachute payment.
Sunderland have shown, Bradford have shown. Sometimes when you go on the slip, you can be away from it for years and years and years. Look at Forest, 25 years. Nobody has a divine right to get back to the Premier League.
No, I mean, we went bankrupt twice in the 7 years after relegation.
There you go. So that's what we're talking about. So listen, it's never a dull moment in the EFL, that's for sure.
No. We talked about the Championship. In League One, we kind of touched on the fact that Sunderland finally got their promotion.
Yeah, I enjoyed that.
Back
I enjoyed
out there. That, yeah. Now, how do you think they would be suited for staying up in the Championship?
Top six favourites.
Yeah.
Top six, yeah.
You think they're going to ride that momentum?
I do. I think they've got a really, really strong manager. I think they've got a core of some good young players. I think they've got a goal scorer in the Loch Ness Drogba, who'll do well at that level because of the physicality and he's a physical player. I think they've just got a nice gel, a nice mixture. Because it's a club that size, they're now on the up. And when a club that size is on the up, usually what happens is it goes fast. Bang, bang, bang. Do not be shocked if they're top six next season. And as Luton have just showed, you know, when you've got the right team spirit and you've got the right camaraderie, and the one thing I noticed about their manager, Neil, what he's done since he's gone in there is they've lost like 1-15 or whatever, and he's made them a lot more resilient defensively. And the one thing we learned is in the Championship, you need to be resilient defensively. So, and you're going to have, they always have the advantage that when people come to their place, there's 40,000 Macans screaming and shouting and supporting them. And that's worth points on the board. So I do. I think I would have a bet. I'd bet $5,000 on them. I'm not allowed to bet, by the way. But I would bet money on them finishing in the top six next year.
And it's interesting that they cleared the deck still yesterday, I think. Or maybe it was late last week that they'd let go like 10 or 15 players. So, you know, they're being pretty ruthless.
But they're in good shape because you remember 3 years ago they had players on $50,000
in League One.
They had historical aggro players on massive contracts. They're not lumbered with that anymore. They've now got obviously a young rich owner. I don't know if the previous owners are getting bought out now. They've got a club with unbelievable income potential, and they've cut their overheads and wage bill right down, and younger players on a lot less money. I would imagine if you looked at their budget versus their income next year, they'd probably make a profit until they start spending. So, whereas before, I think when they were relegated, they were facing like a 50 million.
How the heck do we pay these bills when we've got 20,000 there rather than
40,000? Right. And their academy's producing talent. You look through the team, there's two or three that have come through their academy, and they are proper players. So, they're in really, really good shape. Seriously, put money on them, my opinion.
And then in League Two, we talked a little bit about Port Vale obviously beating Mansfield. So it's kind of another season in League Two for Mansfield, which personally I was hoping that Mansfield would get out, but only because, they've got a lot of money and so they'll be competing with us against a lot of signings next year in League Two. But
yeah, I guess so. The Radfords really have a go all the time. I know David Sharp's in there running the shop. I guess they got to start quicker this time. And if they do that, they've got a chance. League Two, again, tough, tough league. I think your biggest problem next year for everyone, including you guys, is Stockport. From what I'm hearing, they're going in big, on free signings and players. They're after players from a lot higher and offering, and that's just the rumour mill. Fair play, they're being ambitious. The owner there doesn't want to mess around. They obviously want to go again. The manager there is very successful. He left Hartlepool to go there, didn't he? And I think if you want me to pick someone out, it's going to be, the real front runners this year in doing deals and being up there, is going to be Stockport.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's going to be a bit of money there with Stockport, with Mansfield still. Who knows about Salford? I never know whether they're reining things in a little bit now or not.
Yeah. Young coach, obviously, they've gone down that route. They've done the Ipswich thing. I don't know. I mean, obviously, they've had now two seasons where, most people would say, oh, they haven't done well. They've been top 10. They've established themselves in the league, which is the first thing you want to do. And yes, they wanted to win. And I know Gaz has reined in the spending. And they've actually had two good finishes since the reigned in the spending. So, they obviously want to develop footballers and they don't want to go crazy, in the market. And they probably can't after COVID and even though they've got wealthy owners. So, I don't know. Depending on how good the coach is, yes, they could be up there. But, and again, after Bristol Rovers start last year, it doesn't matter how anyone starts. You go on a run, you see what happened. I was disappointed for the Cobblers because we always need that gate money, in the Derby game. And you think, I think Scunthorpe had like 7 teenagers in the team or whatever it was.
We played them a couple of weeks beforehand and we were 2-0 up after like 4 minutes and we should have absolutely battered them and just took our foot off the gas. And obviously Bristol Rovers needed the goals and just kept on going.
Yeah, they're obviously on the beach, which is a real shame, but that happens. That's football. So, League Two is interesting.
And after that, I thought Northampton were up against it after that, just the deflation of not going up on the last day and taking that into the playoffs. I thought they might struggle.
Hey, I'll tell you what I've loved this weekend. I've watched all the non-league games. I absolutely fucking love the Grimsby Wrexham game. That was a crazy game. Fucking bonkers. I mean, bonkers. I'm ringing Baz and going, my God, Baz. Honest to God, it reminded me of the Liverpool Palace FA Cup semi-final 20-odd years ago. It was 5-4 at the Palace. It was just mental. And a fair play to Grimsby. Nobody expected that to happen. And obviously, you've got your guy there. And we know about the big spending at Wrexham. But I mean, my God almighty, you may as well not play with defenders and goalkeepers, either team. It was just like every time a corner went in, it was like, shit, here they come. It was just like mad, both sides. And then, for Grimsby, just shows you centre-half scoring goals. Good centre-halves with goals in them. It's what you want, isn't it? And then I watched Solihull, yesterday. I'm quite impressed with their stadium, actually. Looked quite tidy. beat Chesterfield. I fancied them anyway, and Baz always keeps me up to date with some of the non-league teams and what's going on. And that Grimsby Solihull, that's going to be a good game. I fancy actually Solihull to win.
Yeah, it's you know, I was happy that Wrexham lost. I could only listen. It wasn't on TV over here, so I was listening to it via.
You don't like Phil Parkinson?
Well, I don't. I mean, Parky did great things for us, but I don't. I mean, it's the. I don't want another Moneybags team in League Two, so there's a selfishness really related to that. Because I don't need somebody else coming and trying to buy the league as well next year.
But what I've always said to you, and I said this during COVID when people said about financial fair play, I always said down in League Two and League One, it's not about the money, it's about the recruitment. You know, you don't have to be, we've shown that, the big clubs and us and whatever else, it's never be frightened of somebody coming in and spend all that money. You know, you see it all the time. It doesn't always go to plan. So I know exactly what you're saying, and Wrexham and clubs are showing. Not always doesn't go to plan.
Yeah, it doesn't always mean the money. I mean,
but Wrexham will win non-league by 25 points next year, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
But I remember us, you know, when we're talking about Ryan Reynolds coming in, and you were saying like, I wouldn't want to buy a National League team because you've got two promotion spots, and you know, there's more and more money coming into that league.
When you see how bad the bottom of League Two was and whatever else, they really have to change that. But that's not for me to say. I don't know how that gets done or whatever else, but. I think from an I'll tell you what I quite liked about the non-league thing was their playoff structure. I quite like with you know the
yeah you had the top two get you know
a bye and then the next four play and then you know quite liked it you know extended it but I you know yeah the, before long three have to come up like you know it really is a fifth division it really is like, sorry you call it a fourth division.
I mean the top half of the. The top half of the National League is better than the bottom half of League Two.
It's scary. I mean, it's scary. I mean, you see Wrexham and, you know, the kind of Dode Ape.
Yeah, and Notts County again.
Notts County in there. Chesterfield are in
there. Torquay did well last year and finished bottom, like mid to bottom, South End.
Boreham Wood. I mean, you just go through the South End. I forgot about South End. Jesus. I mean, you know, scary. Scary league. Be thankful. Luton have shown there's a way, there's a pathway. You know, I dare say Stockport now are going through their golden patch now that they're going to have. And fair play.
And York you know, just got promoted back in there as well from National League.
Exactly. So, you know, what I've always said to some of these clubs and the fans, you know, it's dark days. And then when you get good days, those good days usually come in like batches.
I always say like it's about cycles and never be too high when you're at the top. Because,
of course,
you know,
never get too low.
The low is going to come.
It is cycles. And, you know, I always said I felt it was going to be a good 4 or 5 years for Posh. Even with a relegation, I stand by that. I do. I think it's going to be a really, really exciting 4 or 5 years. And that going back to the promotion, we've got promotion, relegation. And I still think the next few years are going to be really exciting. So, you know, and relegation doesn't change that. That can happen for a variety of different reasons, you know. But there's some good teams coming down from League One, by the way. I mean, you got to be stressed about that as well, no? Like thinking.
Well, who we got? We got Crewe coming down. Doncaster, AFC Wimbledon. Who's the fourth one that I'm missing?
Gillingham,
yeah.
I mean, you know, they're all clubs who've done all right recently, in recent years in League One. You know, I mean, you probably on paper think, well, I'm not really frightened of them, but, yeah, you know, they're going to be decent.
Yeah, it's going to be another decent, tough, you know? Another tough got, division.
Swindon have got, like, you know, their new owner from last year. Year one's out of the way, so, you know, Northampton will be strong again. I mean, thank goodness there's four spots.
Right. I mean, that's the only. I mean, that's why it's so hard to get back out of these. You know, if you get sucked in, you know, you see these clubs have bounced back, and I always wonder why the hell didn't or couldn't we do that? Because you get sucked in there for a couple of years, and then you're just one of the masses.
Yeah, 100%. It's scary. So so that's it really, covering all the football. What else to talk about?
I'm just interested to see lots of managerial changes, and there's like openings still. There seems to be a few clubs who have either just brought managers in or are still waiting to find, like Blackburn, I think, haven't got a manager
QPR,
in yet.
Barnsley.
Yeah.
Barnsley got a manager yet?
I haven't seen that. I couldn't tell you, to be honest with you.
Yeah, there's quite a few vacancies, which is surprising.
Like for the end of May.
Charlton yeah. as well. They haven't got one. A massive club.
You had Forest Green, Rob Edwards going to Watford.
Yeah, but they've already, didn't they get the Halifax? No.
No, Key Wilde went to Barrow.
Obviously, you got Fleetwood, Hire Scott Brown.
Yeah, what do you make of that one?
Listen, you know what? You just don't know, do you? You don't know. I mean, Andy's obviously got a particular type of manager. He likes ex-footballers who are just retired. Joey Barton, this one, you know, did okay with Joey. They got to the playoffs, probably hoping for the same thing. You know, they've got some good young players at Fleetwood with their academy. So, you know, I haven't seen enough Scottish football. I haven't seen enough interviews with Scott Brown. You know, he's obviously a fucking methodical winner. You know, he's got trophies as long as, you know, my Mickey on a, you know, cold day. You know, he's got a lot of trophies, and you know, who knows? I mean, could there be a surprise package? Time will tell.
All right. Well, let's wrap that up for another season.
One thing.
Yeah.
Got to discuss the Liverpool shambolic fucking nonsense.
You want to go there?
I do want to go there because I've seen this woman from France called AOC.
Yeah.
And I thought, fuck me, there's two gobshites called AOC out there. I'm sure you probably have an AOC t-shirt in your wardrobe.
No, that's too far left for me.
Fair play. So I was like, you know what? How the hell France? And then I heard they got the World Cup and they got the Olympics coming up. I mean, are you fucking kidding me? For that country to have any events of that magnitude, that, you know, all sporting associations need to be reviewing that. Because I don't give a shit. You know, they can blame Liverpool fans all they want. Our eyes don't tell lies. We all saw the footage.
Well, the story changed every 2 minutes, didn't it?
On their side. It didn't change from the journalists who were their side. It's been consistent throughout. And to tar Liverpool and their fans after what they went through, you know, Hillsborough and everything else, absolutely disgusting. Yeah,
and Hastel as well.
And horrible. And I tell you what, the French, they owe a massive apology. You know what? It's outrageous.
They're just going to double down on it, though, aren't they?
Yeah, well, fuck that. Because, you know, we all, you know, in our leagues and everything else, and England, the country, you know, the nation needs to be saying no. No, because we've got fans going out to these places, going to World Cups, going to Rugby World Cups, going to events. That can't happen. That cannot happen to see kids being tear gassed. I mean, you for a minute there, you probably thought Trump was back, you know, and you saw the tear gas and all the pepper spray and whatever else. So, I mean, it was just shocking, like shocking. Thankfully, nobody was like majorly hurt.
No, it could have been awful, couldn't it?
It could have been. Phil, I'm watching it and I'm texting my missus when they were like 20 minutes delayed and I'm seeing the things and I'm going, my God, I'm in my mind, I'm thinking, you know what I'm thinking. I'm just thinking, this is a horror show. And like people are going to die looking at this, and I was going to try and go to the game, and I'm so thankful I didn't, because that's just, you know, I mean, so poorly done. But anyway, I just wanted to rant as a Red. I wanted to just say that's just terrible.
But can we maybe, being the contrarian, can we throw stones in glass houses with everything that's been going on with all of our end of season pitch invasions and, you know, Billy Sharp getting headbutted and, you know, all this going on right now?
Hey, you're absolutely right, but you don't see any of those idiots on pitches getting tear gassed or pepper sprayed. Maybe they should be, but you don't. And that was horrible, seeing the Billy Sharp thing and then seeing the other one. I mean, look, we need to get our shit together. That's COVID 2 years. Fans know football, these young lunatics and whatever else. This is, you know, that's what happens when people are locked up that long and they go out and act like fucking lunatics. And there's too much of that we've seen. We even saw it a little bit like 8-9 months ago. Do you know what I mean? Where there were celebrations and some people were jumping off onto the pitch and you know, trying to hit people. Yeah, I mean, we've got to get our house in order. You're not wrong there, absolutely right. But what I saw and said, all I keep saying to my missus is, I've been to enough American sports events where they're so well operated. I've been to the biggest places in America, the biggest events, you know, NFL, Super Bowl, tennis events, boxing events. And you go to those events, why can't somebody from Europe get in an airplane and go and see how it's done? Because I went to the boxing at Wembley a few weeks ago and it was a fucking horrible time. I mean, a horrible time I had. Do you know what I mean? I was threatened with fucking acid to be thrown on my face and everything. And I thought Wembley was like the shittiest experience I've ever had in my life. Do you know what I mean? So, you know, again, you know, why can't we learn? And, you know, you're getting these stadiums have been built and they built this one in Paris in the outskirts and obviously not a very desirable area. Because it's cheap land and whatever else. But like, to not have the police sorted out, to not have, only have 2 gates out of 14 open. I mean,
20,000 people try to get in.
And no matter what that AOC bird and the other guy says, whatever else, they're covering their asses. Come out, hold your fucking hands up and be accountable and apologize and say it won't happen again. And I tell you right now, the Rugby World Cup and those other events need to be looking at this going, hang on a second. We need an independent investigation because there's no way we can tarnish our brand by putting our event on in your country. And that's it. No more from me.
All right. Well, I hope you have a good few weeks. We'll have
and you, brother.
To catch up. We talked about the fact we're both going to be in England at the same time in the summer. So we'll see if we can do something pod back during the preseason.
You're coming to pod. I said to you, you know, I won't go to Bradford. You know, don't create any rumors or any salacious gossip that would start off me being in the director's box with you. So, but yes, you're going to come to pod, see a game. And obviously, safe travels, you know what I mean? And I'll see you guys when you get over here in the summertime. But all good, fans, and thanks for listening. And give us a boost and make sure you spread the pod out there.
All right. Have a great summer, everybody, and we'll talk to you soon.
Take care, guys.
Take care.
Bye.